Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms podcast with Sarah Kornack and Beth Ann Schwamberger. This is episode 48. Today on the show, we're talking with Melissa Kaiserman, who is an Etsy shop owner with over 9,500 sales to date. And as it so happens, the date of this airing, October 14th, 2014, is her three-year Etsy anniversary of the day she listed her first product. Melissa and her husband have even been able to make this their full-time income for their family. She has so much to share with us, so let's get
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today, we're thrilled to welcome Melissa Kaiserman to the show. Melissa has a very successful Etsy shop called A Time for Everything, where she sells these adorable cash envelopes along with an organizing system for them. She has over 9,000 sales to date. She also has a blog at atimeforeverything.net. She's mom to three boys and one girl, ages 6 to 13, and they keep her smiling, on her toes, hugged, and humble. She's a sewer, crafter, organizer, thrifter, homeschooler, and Christ follower, among many other things. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Melissa, could you tell us a little bit more about your family and then about how you got started in business?
Sure. I've been married to my husband, Dave, for about 17 and a half years. And as you said, I have four children that are 13 down to six, three boys and a girl. I have my degree in education, actually. I used to teach and then I worked in children's ministry, but I've been home with my children since about a week before my oldest was born. And when our daughter, who's our third child, was about 3 months old, I was really discovering more blogs and finding out that kind of people like me were blogging, and it sounded like fun. So I decided to do it. And it took me hours to get it set up because I didn't want to just use the easy way and get a template and start blogging. I wanted to learn HTML and code things and change colors and margins. And it was crazy, but I had a lot of fun doing it. And when I started out, I just kind of blogged about life in general, like a lot of moms do starting blogging. And I talked about my kids and a little bit about scrapbooking because that was my main hobby at that time. And then I started doing more do-it-yourself type of things when we moved from our little starter house to the house we're in now, because I was finding thrift store and garage sale things that I wanted to make over for our home in a frugal way. And so I would post before and after pictures and then started writing tutorials. And that seemed to be something that my readers were really liking. But at some point, I had my house decorated, and so I wasn't doing that so much. And about that time, I started noticing there were a lot of free tutorials online for sewn items. And I'd really at that point wish that I had not taken or that I had taken my mom's attempts to teach me sewing a little bit more seriously. I had made a couple things as a teenager, but it frustrated me. And she had given me her machine when she upgraded, and it basically just traveled with me from place to place through college and into marriage and hung out in the closet, except when I'd pull it out to actually sew on a scrapbook page. So I finally decided to stop being afraid of that machine and just start with some really easy tutorials that just had straight stitching, you know, like camera strap cover and throw pillow cover. And once I started doing some of those things and actually seeing the end product, I totally was hooked on sewing at that point. But I still wasn't super confident because it was still all straight lines and nothing complicated. And I had been using the envelope system since I graduated from college, and that was 21 years ago. When I got my first job, I started right into it. And then I came across in 2010 a tutorial for a wallet that was made out of oilcloth that was to be used with the envelope system. I'd kind of gotten sick of all my ratty envelopes, and so I decided I would try it, even though it looked really intimidating and I had never put in a zipper before. So I probably took like 10 hours to make that wallet. It was absolutely ridiculous. I'd found some laminated cotton. I'd never worked with oilcloth or anything, but I found laminated cotton locally. And so I made that wallet and I was so excited to have it done, but I was like, I am never doing that again, because that was crazy how long it took me. But then I decided that I would share it on my blog, but not in a, hey, look what I can make you sense, but here's a link to the tutorial. Go for it if you want to make yourself one. So when I shared it, I had comments, emails, Facebook comments, and friends in real life saying, oh, will you please make me one? I'll pay you to make me one. And at first, I thought, no, there's no way I can do one more of these, let alone a bunch more. And then I decided to think about it, the more that people asked me. And I finally said, okay, I'll take orders for like a dozen. And so I did that. I got the orders pretty quickly and cut it off. And I got completely burnt out doing it, because it still wasn't, I wasn't in a rhythm, and so they still took me a really long time to make. So I decided no more. People kept asking. I came up with a simpler style of wallet and started selling those just on my blog. And people were still asking for the bigger wallet. So once a few months had passed, I didn't feel so burnt out, kind of like when you go through labor and then you forget what it's like until you're going to get ready to have another child. And that's why people keep having children, because they forget what labor is like. And so that was kind of like that, where it wasn't so recent, the burnout wasn't. So I decided to go ahead and do a few more, but I still wasn't on Etsy. I really didn't get Etsy, because I'd only shopped on there maybe once. And I was kind of afraid that I wouldn't understand it, the learning curve would be too high. And so I just kept adding wallets to my blog, and I was not selling a whole lot, but that was okay, because I was at a point in my life where I didn't really want to have a huge business. But I had friends who were really encouraging me to try it out. So I had gone on my first craft retreat and had an opportunity to make several wallets all at once. And I thought, well, since I have kind of an inventory, I'm going to go ahead and try to figure out Etsy and just see what happens. So in October of 2011, I had technically opened my shop in May of 2011, only by reserving the name so that I would have it in case I wanted to do it in the future. But I listed my first item on October 14th. I listed the few things I had made on that retreat, and I actually had a sale within 24 hours. And I was so excited, because in the meantime, I'd been reading a little bit about Etsy, and I knew that wasn't normal.
Right.
But because when I started selling on Etsy, there was only one other seller who was doing any sort of cash envelope system product. And it was different than mine. Hers were a fabric pouch that had individual envelopes inside, and the flap came over and kind of fastened with ribbon. So I think that's one reason that I was able to start out kind of with a bang, is because there was a very slim market for them, and a lot of people were going to the envelope system because the economy wasn't so great still. And so I think that I was just coming up in search really easily. The market, especially on Etsy, is very flooded with envelope system products now, but at the time that was it, just this one other seller and me. So I actually had a pretty decent stream of sales after that, enough to build up my supplies and, you know, shop for Christmas gifts for my family and that kind of thing. And it was still just a little tiny part-time thing. And then in December of 2011, which was just 2 months after I had started selling, Tony Hammersley from A Bowl Full of Lemons contacted me and asked if I'd be interested in hosting a giveaway on her blog of one of my premium wallets. And so I agreed to do that. And I sent her one, and she did a giveaway in January that really was a huge boost to my shop. I consider that one of the main catalysts in my shop's growth. And I still get Etsy traffic from that blog post, and it's been almost 3 years. So that was really a huge blessing. I offered free shipping during the time of that giveaway, and I had a lot of sales from that. So I think it started to grow more after that point. And then during that time, my husband was working what he considered his dream job, and management had changed the previous summer, and his work environment had become really toxic, and he just kind of stuck with it and was trying to make the most of it and just do what he needed to do. But it was really deteriorating and really affecting his stress level and, of course, our family as a result. So he just really felt like he was supposed to leave. And so we decided to start putting all of the money from Etsy into savings so that we could build up like 3 to 6 months of living expenses to cover us between the time that he eventually would resign and get a new job. So he actually did resign at the end of the summer in 2012. And a couple weeks later, I received an $1,800 order from a credit union that was having an event, and they needed like door prizes for 200 people. And so they chose what I had, a combination change purse and card holder at that time, and that was in within their budget to be able to do that. So I had to close my shop for a week just to get that order done, and I could never have done it if my husband hadn't been home.
Wow,
that's amazing.
And while he was looking, I know, while he was looking for jobs too, he was like, you know, I might as well learn how to do some things to help you and not just sit on my hands because I'm here. So I started teaching him to do some of the intermediary tasks, none of the cutting of the fabric or any of the sewing, but there's just steps in between and then finishing steps, you know, trimming and turning right side out and poking out the corners and that kind of stuff that I taught him to do. And the shop continued to grow, and my husband was applying for jobs that he was really qualified for, and he would make it to the final interview. 3 different jobs that he would have loved to have, made it to the final interview and didn't get the job. And we finally, the light went on. Like, this, we're supposed to be doing this together, because he was doing so much for me, and the shop was growing enough that if he had gone back to work, I would have had to really cut back, not take as many orders, not be able to create as much inventory. So my Etsy shop would have had to move backwards a little bit, which would have been fine if, you know, if that's what had to happen. But we realized that we were really working together well as a team, and it was causing the shop to be able to grow. And we were just loving the dynamics of our family with having him home, and the way that it was for our kids and our relationship. And also, it was just so much less stressful for me, you know, to be running a business, but able to be, have the flexibility of running errands during the day or having him be able to pick up kids and take them places. And so it just was working really, really well with the growth of our shop for him to be home. So we don't have any debt except for our house. So we're able to do that. If we had a lot more expenses, we wouldn't be really making enough to be able to, but we're in a place where we can. We're just frugal, and our lifestyle is worth it enough for us to live frugally to be able to keep doing this together. So that is the story of how we got to where we are. That's just been over a little over 2 years now since we have started doing this full time, essentially. And I guess it's been almost 3 years since I first listed my items on Etsy. These 3 years on October 14th.
Melissa, that is such an amazing story. And I did not realize that your husband was now able to do this with you. That is super exciting.
It is.
But for those who are listening who may not know, what is the cash, what is the envelope system that we keep referring to? Just so people have a background. Most people probably know, but just in case.
Yes, that is a very good question. So the envelope system is what you use when you want to do a cash budget and really monitor your spending so that you are only spending what you've budgeted for certain categories during the month. And typically, you would only use the envelope system for what you're literally going to use cash for. Nowadays, most people pay a lot of their bills through their bill pay and through their bank or automatic withdrawal, that kind of thing. So most people will not pull cash for, you know, mortgage, electric bill, those kinds of things. But categories such as groceries, clothing, entertainment, personal care items, those kinds of things where it's really easy to overspend and not track what you are spending. You pull it out in cash each month or each pay period, and you put it into your corresponding envelopes. And in my case, my basic wallet has very sturdy dividers inside of it. And so you can label each divider, put your cash behind it. And then when it's gone, it's gone. So if you run out of entertainment money and there's still a week till payday, you are done with entertainment until the next payday. So it's a way to discipline yourself. A lot of people use it just to get out of debt, and then they might stop using it. Some people just like the discipline of always making sure they're sticking to their budget, which is a good thing to have even if you've gotten out of debt, because you're just making a plan for your money. And as Dave Ramsey says, you're telling it where to go. So those are tools that I make. I make a few different styles for people to be able to use that system in their spending, but have it be something cute and durable. So that's what motivated me to start making them. And when I made my second wallet design, my whole goal was to make something that pretty much everyone could afford. It's $18. I've actually never raised the price of my pre-made ones that I make ahead of time and put in inventory. And because I want people to not feel like the other people can have something pretty, but they can't because they're on a really tight budget. I think a lot of people, if they even save for a couple months, they can still buy one. And I want to always keep that option, affordable option, even as I design ones that are more complex, so that most people can afford it if they would like to buy one.
That's a great idea. I love that you're still, you know, keeping that ideal customer in mind. So, Melissa, I know that your own blog was probably a big jumping off point for the growth of your Etsy shop. And then also you talked about the giveaway you did with a bowl full of lemons. Do you happen to know how many visitors she was getting on her blog at the time that you did that giveaway?
You know, it was a lot smaller than now. She transferred platforms. She was on Blogger and went to WordPress. And I want to say that at that time, she might have had around 20,000 followers, 15 to 20,000 followers, and she's probably at 50 to 60 now. So it was still a pretty decent-sized blog, but nothing like it is now. And I actually advertise on her blog now. I'm one of her contributors. I contribute to her budgeting section. I'm on her creative team. So that is another way that I get traffic from her blog currently.
Oh, wow. So how did that come about in terms of you becoming a contributor?
She asked me, I think it was probably about 9 months after the giveaway. She said that she was forming a team and she had a few different areas that she wanted people to give contributor posts in. And she asked me if I would do the budgeting area. And I think it's just because of the relationship we had established through the giveaway, through me following her blog and following her on social media and maintaining that relationship. So she just asked me if I would do that, and I've been doing that for 2 years now.
I think you brought up a great point too, Melissa, that building those relationships, we've just heard from so many moms online that that's just so important. So good for you for, you know, staying in touch with her via social media. And I know actually that's how we met you.
Yes.
Yeah, you found us and we were like, oh my goodness, Melissa, she's great. We need to have her on the show. So very cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of just, you know, traffic sources to your shop, now that you are doing this full time and it's pretty much supporting your family, what are the other ways you've grown your shop? What are the other strategies you have for getting those new customers to find you?
On a practical level, I have learned that I have to think outside the box of where my customers are, because in the beginning, I think I assumed that most of my customers would be people who follow frugal living type of websites and Facebook pages and those kinds of things. But what I've discovered is that a lot of those people have the mindset of, why in the world would I pay for something that's helping me get out of debt? They're viewing it as, and it's an unneeded expense, rather than seeing it as something that if you're budgeting blow money, you know, most people budget some level of pocket money. I know for some people that's not possible because they're in very dire straits financially. But for a lot of people, they do budget blow money. And so while it's not a need, it is something that you could save for that makes a little bit more fun. I've had lots of people tell me that they have done better sticking to their budget when they have something pretty to use. So a lot of those people on the frugal living sites don't see it that way. They see it as an unnecessary expense. So I had to start looking at, okay, where are my customers then if they're not there? Because you would think they would be there because this is all about budgeting. And I think that Toni hosting the giveaway on her blog made me realize that probably my customers are a little more in the area of people who like to organize their things, because this organizes their budget, it organizes their money, and people who like to organize usually like things that are cute. And there's a lot of moms who follow these organizing blogs, and a lot of those moms are on a budget. So I have found that thinking outside the box and looking in different areas for my audience has been a lot more beneficial for me. So organizing blogs have honestly been my best, in general, my best source of traffic and customers. So I have done giveaways on other organizing blogs. And my only two giveaways that really didn't have a great return were on blogs that were focused on frugality or budgeting, which is so interesting to me, but that's just the way it worked out. And my very best giveaway was on Money Saving Mom, which is a frugal living website, but because she has such a huge readership, that made a difference, I think, as far as the kind of the pool of people that were drawn from who might be interested in purchasing a wallet. So I think that's been the biggest thing that I have done to grow my business in a practical sense and find customers. And I'm also active on Facebook, and I've started being more active on Instagram. And Pinterest is something I've used, although I'm trying to learn right now how to use it a little bit better for my business. And I think just connecting with my existing followers, blog followers and Facebook followers and customers has really helped as well. On a personal level, I think that just living my message has attracted customers, because I'm not just a crafter who makes envelope system wallets just because she can, and I didn't just decide to jump on a bandwagon. I was a person who was already living on a budget. I had been using the envelope system for years. I had a need, which was to use something besides my ratty old envelopes. I figured out a way to meet my need, and then I shared it with others and was able to eventually meet their needs. And because I'm constantly assessing how I can better my product because I'm using it, that I'm able to create new products, modify existing products, because I'm living this every day. So I think I've earned people's trust because they know that I'm not like using my credit card on the side and just selling these envelope system wallets to make money. I'm not disconnected, I guess, from my product. Jeff Coins has a quote that he uses, activity follows identity. And I think because I identify myself as someone who lives on a budget on the envelope system, so the things that I do and say follow that. And I think that creates a trust with people, and so it draws customers in too on that personal level.
I'm sure you're right that being genuine and in who you are, which then translated into your business, has certainly led to some of your success. You're not pushing a product that you can't stand behind personally.
Right.
Now, I thought I had seen something on your blog where you are possibly opening another shop or outlet for your cash envelope system wallets. Is that correct?
Right now, I am in the process of transferring, migrating my blog over from Blogger to WordPress. I'm actually really close to making that change. Should happen within the next day or two, because I have my blog set up. And for now, I'm just using a plugin, WordPress plugin called Etsy 360, where I can have a shop link in my navigation menu that will bring up a form, visual form of my Etsy shop on my website, but the transactions will be done through Etsy for now. But I'm hoping by the end of the year, have a separate shop set up on my site. Etsy has been a wonderful place to start. I would encourage almost everyone to start, unless they already have some sort of a large following, large blog readership, because people know Etsy. There's so much of the work done for you. I'm finding that on WordPress, it's a wonderful tool, and I think I'm going to be really excited by all the things I can do with it. But it's a pretty steep learning curve, and the whole commerce side of it has taken me a little bit longer to figure out than I expected. But on Etsy, you know, the whole format is already set up, as you ladies know, and you just have to plug everything in. So I am not going to leave Etsy, even when I have my new shop set up. But because we do this full time and it's the only source of income for our family, we're just feeling like we really need to make sure that we own our shop. And because we don't own our shop on Etsy, we're selling on someone else's land, basically. That's a little bit nerve-wracking when you think about what if something happens to the shop. So we're going to have a shop set up on my website, which will still be a timeforeverything.net, and we will also have the Etsy shop for people that go there and search. So I'm going to be learning how to manage sales coming from two places, and we'll see how that goes.
Two questions based off of that. First of all, we specifically had a question from a listener about how to transfer a blog from Blogger to WordPress. So if you had any quick tips, I'm sure that would be helpful. But then also I was wondering if there was some sort of program or format that you were using for this new shop that you're creating, which, by the way, I think is so smart, because you're right. If all your eggs are in one basket and that's your livelihood, that could be very scary should something change in the Etsy world.
Okay. As far as the migration from Blogger to WordPress, I have just done a lot of researching. I'm kind of a research nut. I love to gather information. And so I have found some blog posts that take you through step by step, and I am following those right now. I've actually, what I did is I kind of took the ones that I felt were about the five or six best as far as covering it comprehensively, specifically for someone who already had a domain name like I did. I wasn't using a blogspot.com address. I've been using a timeforeverything.net for about 3 years now. So I had to find steps for doing it where I already have a domain name. So I have all the tabs open, and I'm going across and comparing their steps to make sure they're kind of coinciding and I'm not missing anything. And I could pay someone to do it, but I really love to learn how to do this myself if I ever need to do it again, or if someone I know needs help. And so I kind of tend to force myself through the learning process. So if you feel really uncomfortable with doing it yourself, I would suggest that you find someone that you can hire to do it for you. And Gretchen Louise, I believe her website's gretchenlouise.com. She's a great person. She actually lives not very far from me. And Blogalina is another person who will do a transfer. And I think Blogalina actually includes a year of website hosting in the price. So I think for people that are super uncomfortable with techie kind of stuff, it's best to pay someone, because you can mess up some things with links and all that. I have a friend who had to deal with some things on the other end that had to be fixed. They weren't tragic things, but just things that took time. But if you want to do it yourself, I would suggest finding the most well-done step-by-step outlines, making sure that they compare well, and then just going through each thing one at a time. And then you can actually develop your site on a test URL, which is what I've been doing, so that I can get everything looking the way that I want and nobody can see my blog. And then when I point the servers to the domain and change all that and have it go to my WordPress site, I can put up a little maintenance mode thing so that nobody sees it quite yet, so that I can make sure it's literally going to my domain name and make sure all those things are working fine before I make it public. So I'll probably try to have that up for only about 24 hours max so that I'm not losing that traffic. So that's the migration part. And then as far as the commerce side of it, I'm using a WordPress plugin called WooCommerce. It's a free plugin, but you do have your normal fees, like for accepting PayPal payments. And if you want to use any other plugins for the shipping side, there's always things that you can add on that would cost. But WooCommerce itself is free, and the WordPress child theme that I'm using actually has it incorporated and styled so that it matches the rest of my theme. You can also buy WooCommerce. Well, I think there might even be some free themes that you can put on your blog, but it wouldn't necessarily have the same colors or styling as your main site. Those are things you could go in and change if you're comfortable with that. But because it's built into my theme, actually installing it was a pretty easy thing. And then it's just a matter of getting your products in there, product variations. It's a lot more work than Etsy because it's not just a thing that's already outlined for you and you just plug stuff in. You have to do a little bit more than that, but it's very well rated, probably gets the best ratings out of any commerce plugins that WordPress offers. So that is what I will be using.
That's great to know. You are definitely a wealth of knowledge when it comes to a lot of this technical blog stuff.
I was curious if you're still putting a lot of effort into your blog as well, or are you trying to shift your focus completely to your product these days?
I am actually trying to shift some of my focus back to blogging. Ever since I started creating a product and selling it, it has made it really difficult to try to manage blogging and producing a product as well. Some people are able to do it, and I marvel at it, but I really miss that part of it, that part of the connection. And that's one reason I'm moving to a new platform, and I'm kind of not really rebranding, but I have a new tagline for my business, and there'll be a little bit different look because I really want to have that a little bit more developed and have that connecting with my readers a little bit more and not just be selling them something. So I'm not going to set any specific goals because I have a tendency to be a little bit too optimistic and then I fail and then I'm discouraged and then I just don't blog at all. So I would really like to blog at least once a week. That's kind of my minimum goal. But my new tagline is managing time, talent, and treasure for his glory. So I'm going to focus on those three areas because those seem to be what I tend to talk about the most. And also, I did a reader survey, and that's what people are wanting. So in the area of time, I'll be talking about things like planning, organizing, things that help us to manage our time better. And talent will be business-focused, sharing things about, you know, what I've learned and what I'm doing with my business, because I know some people, when they're starting out, they gobble up that kind of knowledge, you know, and I think I'll probably do a lot of Etsy-specific things. And then treasure would be the whole area of budgeting and frugal living. So I want to be covering those three areas, each of those areas at least once a month, you know, alternate weeks probably, so that my blog isn't just sitting there idle. Like I said, I have a tendency to get discouraged and then I feel paralyzed. Even switching platforms and starting to blog again, there's this part of me that is afraid that, like, oh, they're not going to take me seriously because it's been 6 months since I've done anything and they're just going to think that I'm going to flake out and not post here very often. And there's the whole concept of do it afraid. And I think that that's what I'm having to do is just step forward, even though I'm afraid of failing or afraid of not being able to manage both, because my heart is really there and I really want to do what it takes to make sure that blog is active, even if it's not something where I'm there multiple times a week. I don't want it to be this dead space that people come and go, surely she's updated in this amount of time, and then they come and find that I haven't.
I think that's a great idea, though, to, like you said, just do it afraid, you know, I mean, and maybe you won't, maybe there will be a week where you're not able to post, but, you know, just kind of keep plugging along. And I think, too, though, that, you know, when you're writing about things that you're passionate about, that people pick up on that, and some of your old readers will come back and be like, wow, this is great. I've got to share this with people, and things can still spread and pick up. And I know even some of my favorite bloggers, if they don't write often, I still keep coming back and checking just because it's like, okay, but I know I love everything they post. So, oh, it's like, okay, I'll check back again next month and, you know.
Yes. And I am going to, my plan is to participate in the 31 days in October.
Oh, okay.
So I'm hoping that that will give me a jump start and get me back into the habit of blogging so that even though I won't be able to continue doing it every day after that, that'll just be fresh and motivate me to keep going.
Definitely. And that's the 31 days you're talking about. Is that McQuillan's? Is that her name? Or the Nestor?
Yes, the Nestor.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's Michaelin, but I'm not sure Michaelin. Exactly how you pronounce it. Yeah. Yes, the Nestor. I did it 2 years ago. I did 31 Days to a Better Budget, and that was really fun, and I still get lots of visitors to that series. And I'm actually going to do, this time I'm going to do 31 Days to Managing Your Time, Talent, and Treasure, because I thought that would be a good way to tie in kind of that new focus of my blog. And I'll spend the first day, I'll kind of introduce it, and then I'll spend the next 10 days on time and 10 days on talent and 10 days on treasure. I'm just going to share some of my favorite methods, tools, and resources in each of those areas and link to them just to give, a flavor of the kinds of things that I'm going to be talking about.
I love that. We'll definitely be hopping on over and checking out your posts for sure. So.
And now that I've said it, I have to do it, right?
That's true. You said it. Mm-hmm. By the time this episode airs, it'll be like, okay, Melissa, how's it going?
It's, yeah.
I don't know. It might be the middle of October. And so.
Yeah.
I know. It sounds so good. It definitely made, I was sitting here thinking, I think I'll subscribe to her email feed, to her post feed. I did want to ask, how did you conduct your reader survey? Did you use a certain program? How did you handle that?
I actually created a form in Google Docs, and when I sent out my newsletter, I just linked to that form, and there were a few different types of questions. One was like, rate on a scale of 1 to 10, how interested you are in this topic, with 10 being highly interested and 1 being not interested at all. So I listed a lot of the things that I've talked about on my blog for the last few years, just to see what my audience is currently and what they want to hear about. And then I asked some other questions that were multiple choice. So I used those results to kind of help guide me when I was kind of figuring out the tagline for my business, to see the areas that I wanted to cover. So I linked to it in my newsletter, and then I also ended up towards the end posting the link on Facebook, inviting people there to take the survey if they wanted to give some feedback.
How many responses did you get?
You know, it was not as many as I'd hoped. I think it was probably, I want to say it was close to 100, but I was hoping for a larger percentage of readers. But, you know, a lot of times people just don't want to take the time to click through to something, but I figured the people that are really committed to giving input and wanting to see things covered that they want to hear about, answer the questions. And so, you know, I just had to go by the numbers. Sometimes people offer an incentive for filling out a survey, and I didn't do that. I don't know if maybe that would have been a good idea or not, but I chose not to go that route, at least this time.
Well, I think 100 responses certainly gives you a very good idea of where to head or what direction. And like you said, if those 100 took the time to answer, then those 100 are probably that ideal reader that's going to be coming back and actually reading what you put out. So yes. I think that was a great idea to analyze what people wanted. Before we leave the topic of Etsy too much, although this is great, we're learning about so many different things, but do you have maybe one fabulous Etsy tip that you could give an Etsy shop owner, or something that you think has really helped that Etsy traffic in particular, or a little known Etsy fact? We have quite a few Etsy shop listeners. Is there any tidbit of information you could give them?
I would say, with Etsy, and this is not anything new, but I think really focusing on your titles of your products containing relevant information, especially at the beginning, not just for Etsy search, but also for Google search. You know, I don't put cute blue wallet or anything like that in my first words, because people probably aren't going to search for the word cute. Might search for the word blue, but I tend to put colors at the end. But creative titles aren't necessarily a great idea. You want titles that are going to be rich in keywords so that you will be found by people doing a search And so if you start typing in the search box on Etsy some of the terms you think people might use to look up your product, you'll actually get a list of results that drops down that shows what people have searched recently. So let's say I type in envelope system to the search box, that I'm going to get some different variations that people have literally used on Etsy to type into search. So that helps with developing titles and with the tags on the products. It's really smart to make sure that you are doing your best to use what people are actually searching for.
That is a great tip. So, Melissa, do you have any tips specific to the Christmas season on Etsy? Because I know it can just get crazy busy, and for maybe those new shop owners who are tempted to shut down their shop after they get overwhelmed with sales or something like that, or maybe they're not getting enough sales to their or views to their shop at Christmas. I didn't know if you have any tips for handling either the busyness or maybe attracting enough customers.
I think with Christmas, as far as attracting customers, a great thing to do is make sure you're participating in Black Friday, Cyber Monday kind of sales. You can even do that through Etsy. They have specific tags for that so that people can search for those and find shops that are offering specials, whether it's something that's on sale or a freebie that you're including or free shipping or whatever it is that you're doing. That can attract people. I think as far as handling the Christmas sales, it's a good idea to try to be building up some inventory starting now or even before now so that you're prepared. Also, setting a deadline, I think, is vital, where you make it clear in your shop announcement, maybe even in your shop listings, that domestic orders have to be placed by such and such a date in order to be shipped by, and then give a date. And the same with international orders. I would suggest avoiding the phrase "in order to arrive by Christmas," because you can't control that and weird things can happen with the postal system. So if you say orders placed by December 8th will ship by December 19th or whatever you choose to do, then people have a very concrete date to work with. They know when they have to order by. They know when it will be shipped, but with the understanding that once it's shipped, it would most likely reach that person in the United States before Christmas, but can't guarantee that. So I think that's really important, because I know that there are problems around Christmas and even other times of shops getting overwhelmed, and they don't have a plan or system in place to deal with that. And so then there are orders that are not being mailed, people that are depending on them, and it starts being reflected in feedback, and that can really make a shop go under. So I think you have to look at it realistically, not like best case, so I think I can get all these orders done by this date. Be really realistic with what you're willing to take on, and make sure you have figured that out ahead of time so that you don't end up having a poor reflection on your shop.
That's excellent advice.
Melissa, you seem like a techie type of person who likes to do your research. Is there an online tool or an app or a system that you use to stay organized that you have found to be very helpful?
I think one of the things that has helped me the most is the way that I print my orders and organize them. When I was new and I didn't have that many orders coming through, I would just print the entire invoice. And now I use the print edit function on Firefox, and I have it just in my toolbar. And I can, when I click on it and I go to my sold orders, I can just hover over a sale and click it, and it will isolate just the ones that I want to print. So I actually print them according to what day they are scheduled to be mailed by, and I will print them all at once. So instead of printing an entire invoice, it just prints the person's name, what they've ordered, and their total. So I have multiple ones on a sheet, and then I staple those together for each day they're supposed to be mailed, and then I will cut fabrics for that particular day that it's scheduled to ship by. And I have an organizing system where I keep the orders together that are supposed to mail on the same day. So that is just a super, super basic tool. It kept me on top of knowing what has to go out, and I just rotate my drawers with the fabrics and bring the next one up to the top that I need to be working on. And then I have a, kind of a an old drawer that I got at the Farm Chicks show that has these divisions on it, or divisions in it, that's wooden. And I just put my folders one Monday through Friday, the ones that have to ship, and I have them right in order so that at any point during the week I can see what I need to work on next.
That sounds like a really efficient system. Sometimes the simplest things are the best. So,
yes.
Speaking of the number of orders, I'm curious, how about non-Christmas and then Christmas? About how many orders do you think you're shipping a day to get up to that crazy amount of sales that you have?
Hold on just a second. I need to check my account. So as far as my Etsy sales, I try to ship about twice a week, but I typically have, on a normal month where I'm not doing a giveaway where I've got increased traffic in sales, between 150 to 200 packages that I'm shipping each month. So the, you know, on Etsy, it shows how many items you've actually sold. So some of those orders have multiple items in them. So it's,
that's a lot of orders.
That is a lot. Wow. And you're hand making all of the envelopes too. That is really impressive.
Yeah. And we've, you know, my husband and I have gotten a lot quicker at it. Back, I guess, January of 2013, when Jennifer on iHeart Organizing did a post about budgeting, and she had actually purchased a couple of my wallets, and she just shared a picture of hers and a link to my shop, and all of a sudden I'm working that day and my Etsy app is going cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. I'm like, what is going on? So I checked my stats and they were coming from her blog, and I got so overwhelmed with orders that I had to close my shop for the weekend. I think I might have done that twice, and it was a stressful time. I would almost call that the low point of my business, which people would be like, oh yeah, whatever, you were getting a bunch of sales. But in the sense that it was hard for me to really appreciate it because I was so completely stressed because I was really unprepared for handling that. And the great thing though is that it forced me to develop some systems to avoid that in the future. Because what I used to do is, let's say I had a wallet listed in a particular fabric and it sold out and someone happened to notice it, they would say, can I get a wallet made in this? I'd be like, sure, I'll relist that for you and you can purchase it, because it was slow enough that I could do that. So even though it wasn't already made, I could list it and get it made in a couple days. So when this happened with Jen showing the wallet and me getting all this traffic, I was spending about 2 hours a day answering people's convos and listing something reserved in their name so that they could purchase it. And I was having no time to sew, or, you know, a lot reduced time to sew. So I thought, this can't happen anymore. And that's what caused me to create the divided wallet in your choice of fabric listing with a longer turnaround time, because I knew that I had to have a way of not having to do it through convos constantly. And to be able to have stuff pre-made in a limited amount as I had the time, but also have that option for whatever fabric and zipper they wanted, but them knowing they'd have to wait a little longer because it wasn't done. And that was huge help in me dealing later with giveaways where I might have had a lot of traffic because I wasn't completely overwhelmed. But that was a really hard time, because then I felt like, here, I'm closing my shop to try to make these, and then I'm losing out on more orders. And then when I'd reopen up on Monday, I was getting bombarded again with more requests. So that was a difficult but a growth point, definitely, in my business.
I love the way you took that struggle and then you just used that to kind of change and grow. And so, you know, now you are more prepared for that growth. And so that's great. So, Melissa, we've learned a ton from talking with you today. I feel like we could pick your brain for a long while more, but since we know you are very busy, we will wrap things up. But do you have either a funny or adorable mom moment that's happened recently?
You know, I have so many. because I have four kids. I was trying to think of a recent one, and I couldn't think of a specific recent one, but I did think of one of my favorites. And it happened a couple years ago when my youngest was just learning the concept of writing, and he would like scribble across a page on the lines of notebook paper, you know, but it didn't say anything. It was just scribbles. And one day I was working and he brings it down to me and he says, "Here, Mom, this is for you. It says, I love you in Spanish."
Oh, that is so cute.
Of course, I kept that one.
Yeah.
Melissa, could you share your contact information, your Etsy shop, your blog site, all of that for our listeners so that they can find you?
Yes. My main website is atimeforeverything.net. That is all spelled out in the words. Etsy shop is a time for everything with the number four. The other was taken when I signed up, unfortunately. A time for everything, the number Etsy.com. On Facebook, I'm a time for everything, all spelled out. That's also what I am on Instagram. And on Twitter, which I'm not super active on, but if anyone wants to follow me there, I'm a time for EVERYTHNG, I believe. I ran out of characters to do the whole thing. And so, oh, and actually, I'm sorry, I take that back. It's a time with a number four, EVERYTHNG. Pinterest, I'm M. Kaiserman.
Awesome.
Great.
Yeah, we'll link to all of those in our show notes as well.
Yes, and thank you so much. This was really fun. And
oh, you're welcome.
We certainly
really
learned a lot. For the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, head on over to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/48, and you will find a lot of the relevant information that we talked about in this episode. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you sign up for 52 Weeks to a Better Business so that each week you can join along with us as we get a new challenge and help to hold each other accountable as we grow our businesses. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.